Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Lumos.
Dumbledore.
Lumos.
Ron. Ron.
Lumos.
Hermione.
Lumos.
Hermione. Harry Potter. Harry Potter. Harry Potter. Harry Potter.
Lumos. Hello, friends, and welcome to Spellcutters Radio. I'm your host, Ezra, aka Bill. Also known as your friendly tech wizard and former captain of the Hufflepuff Quidditch team, the flannel wizard, yours truly, me. Please welcome your lovely design witch, the fascination of fourth year, my wonderful co-host, and yours, Lottie, aka Fleur.
Hallo. Schön, dass ihr da seid. Willkommen zurück to our little spooky cottage on the outskirts of Tinworth. Come on in. We will discuss Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, Chapter 10, Halloween. Fun fact, this is the first chapter that does not start with the.
Wow.
Before we pumpkin up today's chapter discussion, get it, pumpkin?
Wow.
We will do a short little cottage catch-up. Quiz burl.
Quiz that old burl guy. Sorry, I fell over there. There's a new guy on the podcast named Burl.
Quiz Bill with seasonal trivia. Oh, I cannot talk. Okay.
We're keeping all that in. Okay. It's adorable.
I'm going to quiz Bill with seasonal trivia questions and expand our knowledge about magical and fantastic pea brains.
You know how the Weasleys had a ghoul? In their upstairs.
Yes.
So I'm upstairs right now. We're upstairs in what I like to call the forge. I've been calling this the forge on my Up Talking Tolkien Lord of the Rings podcast.
Yes.
Because it's hot as I'll get out up here, but it's upstairs, and it's where the Weasleys had theirs at. And I feel like Brawl is the gruel of Bill.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Gosh, yes.
So we have a new character on the show. Everyone, and he will come and go. It's maybe the ghoul is sort of like anytime we stumble or get tongue tied, it's like, oh, there's Brawl again. There he goes.
I like that. How would you spell that?
Brull.
Brawl.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So there you go, friends. He's back. I mean, he interrupted my nice pumpkin, ambience we were trying to create there. That's okay. I mean, Halloween,
yes.
Ghouls.
We're,
Goblins.
We're right into the catch up here. Please.
Toad singing.
Describe to me what's going on up here.
Okay. So, we have a candle burning behind, you know, as if it wasn't hot enough up here already. We decided to burn some extra candles. We're ridiculous. We have our pumpkin spice sort of candle in the back. We also have Channel the Flannel burning as well.
You got to save that for up?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So we can't burn the whole thing now because I will be channeling the flannel in my Lord of the Rings podcast, Up Talking Tolkien, an unexpected podcast. Be sure to check it out. I'll mention it later in the show as well, too, as we get into some news. But, yeah, so I was going before the show. Lottie's doing her work. She's tracking stuff down for you guys, writing the beautiful summary, checking into everything, picking the Fantastic Beast. I'm like, all right, let me go in, get some coffee. And Lottie's always like, I'm good. I'm going to, you know, have my own fresh pot of coffee. It's fine. But I knew she would not argue when I got there and I saw pumpkin spiced lattes and pumpkin donuts back on the menu. They're like ready to go. So I was like, okay, this is actually awesome. And yeah, so we, if you, sorry about that. It was a little bit rude of me to be, you know, talking with my mouth full, but hey, I just couldn't help myself. There's still four more sitting over there.
Oh my gosh. No,
I'll have to finish them before the episode.
I think it's great. Yeah, if you haven't already noticed, we decided to make this the Halloween special because it fits the chapter, and I keep seeing all those October posts, which make me super excited for fall and Halloween and Thanksgiving, all that good stuff. I mean, that's what I came here for, right?
That
to the United States.
Right? That's the reason you came here. I think you said, I never really dawned on me, but you were like, wow. Like, there's such a good run. Oh, sorry.
All right, fine.
Just the phone blowing up. Don't, it's Brawl again. Messaging me. You guys keep down. But no, you said that from the start of fall, really all the way up until Christmas, there's something to do. Every month you have something. Like, you have September, we're going to have different festivals, and we're kind of getting into fall season. Then we'll have Halloween. Then we'll have Thanksgiving. And then we'll have Christmas. And then we'll have New Year's Eve.
Yes.
Right? It's crazy.
Lots of good stuff happening from now on.
Yeah, it's fall to winter. But still, it's like from now until Christmas time, there's just a lot going on. There's the football season, which is massive here in the States. I finally got Lottie into football last year when we watched the Super Bowl. And my team, the Bengals. And by the way, Lottie can attest to this. I was a Bengals fan far before they made their Super Bowl run. Okay, because you remember Lane and I got tickets, and I was talking to you, we went to see the Bengals and everything before they were good, and they were on their way to the Super Bowl. Like, yeah. I've been rooting for them for a long time. My favorite quarterback, I'll show you later. He's they call him the comeback kid, John Kitna.
Yeah,
John Kitna, number 3, leading the Bengals. So been a fan for a long time, but I'm excited for football and for all the sort of fall festive stuff that we're going to be doing.
Yes.
You know, wearing flannel, going out and having a bonfire. Going on a, you know, maybe a little corn maze adventure.
Yes.
There's a, what's it called? The Circleville Pumpkin Show.
Your dad was talking about that. He was
huge.
So excited. Yeah.
Massive. You talk about, like, putting Hagrid's pumpkins to shame.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is a little much. Went a little far there, didn't I? But I think they could rival.
I think they could.
I think they could.
I mean,
there's definitely
pictures.
Some magic involved in those pumpkins. But. Anyway, so we're just kind of getting ready for fall, and we're just getting in the spirit, you know.
Yes.
So I'm feeling great. How are you doing, sweetie?
Really, really good. I can't wait for everything pumpkin. I mean, we already have everything pumpkin up here right now.
That's great.
We had a really good morning. Very explosive energy.
Oh my gosh. Some of you might be taking that the wrong way. Please don't. Please do. But also, please don't. Can I set the scene for a second?
Yes.
Okay. And so people are like, oh, I got to like tune this down and got kids in the backseat. No. What happened? We're in the kitchen and we're cooking breakfast. We love making breakfast together. And breakfast is
Sunday
so,
morning.
So great. We're preparing some sausages. We also cooking my dad some hamburgers for when he gets back from church and everything. So you had already made eggs and stuff. And you're like, well, we have some hard-boiled eggs. Why don't I just go ahead and toss one of those in the microwave?
Hey,
no problem.
Hey, can I...
Sure, cut in.
Can I tell people, though, I know that you're not exactly supposed to put them in the microwave. That's why. I was going to put them in for like 10 to 20 seconds.
Yeah.
But the microwave has a button where it's just like automatically like 30.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of a magical button that's sort of like, oh, if you don't have time to press a second digit, you can press one digit.
Yeah.
And we'll just run it for a whole minute.
Yeah, I think I accidentally pushed it twice. And then, you know, I was going to like, okay, don't forget the eggs, 10 seconds, 20 seconds. So just look at it. And then you came out with some big news. about Lord of Rings of Power.
Right. Yes. Yes. Yes.
And
yes.
All of a sudden, my mind was taken off the eggs.
I was talking about Rings of Power, flipping those sausages, and all of a sudden, I am like mid flip, and I just hear the there's a boom, boom. I was like, I started like shaking and like sausages drip, like there's a grease dripping down on me. I'm like, oh, I thought the stove was blown out right in front of me. The microwave is above.
Because we have a gas stove.
We have a gas stove, and I was like, hit the floor. I was like, get out of here, we're under attack. Oh, Death Eaters showed up and they're attacking the burrow. Oh my goodness, thank goodness Dad wasn't here for that. Oh my gosh, so. That was crazy. So we had the eggs. We had one egg, but it made several explosions. And
no,
I
it was actually
the,
two. Sweet.
Was it two? Well, you couldn't tell. I thought it was one large egg in there.
No, only one came back.
Poor things were obliterated. I mean, but the funniest thing was like we had a moment. You know, Lottie was a little bit discouraged, like, oh my gosh, I'm so dumb, I shouldn't have done that, blah, blah, blah. But we just got distracted. And then I remember walking back, telling her moments later, I'm like, yeah, did you see me, like, freak out, like, at the stove, like, shaking? I had this, like, shaking moment where I was like my limbs were shaking. I was like, what do I do? And it was crazy. Yeah. So it felt like, what are those things that they have in... at the Weasley joke shop, they come out.
Probably,
The little honkers or whatever, and they come out and they just like explode, the exploding, whatever. It felt like one of those, except for like this was like a boom.
Yeah, I know.
Boom.
I did too. I thought like, too, like it was the oven or like something, the stove or something. And I mean, like the microwave is right in front of your face. You're standing in front of the oven.
I mean, first of all, I completed the flip of that sausage.
You did.
Piece. And I was like mid boom, and I was like, and I got the flip, and was like, I about to stop, drop, and roll. Is really what I was thinking about. But anyway, so yeah, very explosive morning here at Shell Cottage.
Yeah, very eventful.
Woo. Okay. Oh, all right, that was fun.
I mean, last little catch up here before we get into our trivia training. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm excited because. You know, I'm not saying too much here yet, but okay. We might have a new potential guest soon.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm so super happy and excited to meet that person, and hopefully, yeah, we'll get together soon with her.
Yes, absolutely. And actually, we do have some fun, sort of exciting things coming down the line in terms of just upgrades for the podcast, things that we're going to be doing potentially that might help and encourage us to make more episodes and just to continue doing fun Potter stuff. Mm-hmm. Our YouTube is actually blowing up right now, which is a lot of fun. Go check it out. Harry Potter Hangout. It's exploding. So people are enjoying that. And actually, there's a lot of theories on there that I want to create a segment at some point at the end of the show where we almost do a Harry Potter Hangout recap where we kind of like talk about
that'd be fun.
Yeah, some of the stuff that we talk about on that because we're releasing like. I don't know, 5 or 6 of those a week. Mm-hmm. So obviously we couldn't do all of them, but we have like weeks worth of content in terms of just little theories and little did you knows and fun facts that I think would be fun to put on the podcast. Because again, you're going through this reread, and yeah, we're all in the first book, but boy, it is so much fun knowing it's a reread and it's been out for years that we could just jump ahead and everybody could, you know, experience some fun little tidbits down the line. You know what I mean? So sort of after the reread. Maybe we'll create that segment for you guys. We'll give you little words of wisdom and then a quick little fun thing to go out on, which would just be some Harry Potter Hangout stuff.
So. Sounds good.
But yeah, we have potentially a guest coming on, and who knows? We might actually have – I'm hoping to have more of you on in the future. So if you're listening and you want to reach out and you'd love to share or you want to be on a chapter, I think it's really kind of cool because we want to live up to the idea that we want to, you know, meet new Potter friends and positive. Potter friends.
Yeah.
And we did that the other weekend with the Lottmans. Mm-hmm. It was amazing.
Yeah.
So, and by the way, I'm sure they're stoked. Well, when we get to the Potter news, we got some stuff to kind of share there in terms of things that I think they might be excited about as well. So, yeah.
Oh, yes. You know what I mean? Yes. Yeah. All right, though. Before we go over the news, you got to sweat through some trivia.
Okay. I'm sweating already, so. Might as well trevor me up.
Okay, so this week we're going to do it a little bit differently.
Okay.
And instead of the first question, instead of being a Potter question, okay, it's a Halloween question.
What?
And I wanted to know if you knew, mm-hmm, in what century did the practice of trick-or-treating begin? And we have...
I do know.
You do? Oh my gosh. Okay, let me give you the...
Give me the options.
Okay.
Give me three options.
What if your option is not even in the options?
I'm not going to tell you what my option is until you tell me the options. So,
okay. A, 14th century.
Uh-huh.
B, 20th century.
Uh-huh.
C, 18th century. Or D, 16th century.
Do you know what I was thinking originally was 16th century?
Oh, wow.
And is that wrong or is that right?
That is absolutely correct.
Is
wow,
it correct?
I am
100. Had you not even given me
stunned
options, I was going to say 16th century.
Wow, give me your background.
Now look,
story. How
I,
do you know
here's
that?
The thing. I have said this before, and I don't know if, I think people think I'm just messing around here, but I am a professor. Okay.
Yes.
And I want well. Okay. Just not currently employed at Hogwarts, but I would love to be the history professor.
Yeah.
I want to be so bad. Because I love history so much. And Ben's is just, you know, I mean, he doesn't even know if kids are there. So I feel like we could just put him in a room and he could just do his thing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. True.
So we might, we have some of the students.
You mean like you,
more...
you just say like, hey kids, we're going to go into the other room and Ben's is just
yeah, well,
stuff.
Yeah, well, and there might be some kids who just want to sit in there and listen or whatever. But you might need a different type of student who needs more engagement or something. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I could provide that, you know, sort of differentiate a little bit there,
yeah,
at Hogwarts. For
yeah,
those different learner needs and stuff. I feel like I could do that. But yeah, 16th century. I could be wrong. Wasn't like the Salem witch trials around that time or something? I don't even know. Let me have to look that up. But I don't know. I just it was a guess because I always associate like witchcraft and all these like witchy things around the 16th century for some reason, like that time period.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, and I literally was just taking
That's
a stab
cool,
in the dark
though.
There, honestly.
That's awesome.
So I got lucky on that one.
Nice. So I'm going to give you a little bit of background information here.
Please do.
So in North America, actually, trick-or-treating began to develop as a Halloween tradition during the 1920s.
Okay.
But the European tradition of going house to house collecting food at Halloween goes back at least as far as the 16th century. In Britain and Ireland, there are many accounts of people going house to house in costume at Halloween, reciting verses in exchange for food, and sometimes warning of misfortune if they were not welcomed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, they would, like verses, as in like Bible verses or something, or like just
reciting verses in exchange for food. I don't know. Yeah.
I wonder if it was something like, you know, it's the opposite of like, you know, now we kind of embrace the idea of, oh, we're gonna dress up as like a wizard and a
right,
witch and a
right,
a goblin and a ghoul or whatever. But I back then you'd almost imagine they're trying to. You know, because any sort of dabbling or even pretending like you were into witchcraft, whew, you were, I mean.
Yeah.
You know, things were a little fire. They were explosive or they were drowned in water, whatever, you know. But I don't know. I just think that's kind of, that's interesting. That's a cool fact about Halloween. You know, it makes sense too. Sorry to cut you off. Mm-hmm. In the 1920s. That's when we started kind of, things were really progressive and, you know, mm-hmm, very, what do you call it? I don't know. More provocative. Like we had shifted in the 1920s to different styles of music and dress and, you know, you had all sorts of like bootleggers and stuff like that going on. So kind of makes sense that they, that's the time when our society started to kind of, embrace that stuff. Fantastic
yeah,
Beast is set during that time period. And you see with the, like the, what's her name? Barebone?
Yes.
Yeah, and they're like super against all these, you know, new ways, if you will,
right,
like this new mm-hmm, fad and style and stuff. And
yes,
that also was more like, hey, we're more a little accepting of some of this witchery going on here. We're, they're, I mean, you laugh at it, you make a joke of it, but I mean, in this, if you're letting your kids go trick or treat in the 1920s, I don't know, kind of funny.
Interesting.
Okay, so we got the next.
Okay, next question. I was just thinking about, like, it's interesting. We could talk about Halloween a little bit in our Extendable Year edition.
Yes, I'd love
how it
to.
Came to Can be I ta- our Halloween.
Yeah, you artist. Know what I'll do? I'll tell you my experience. In
Sounds
this,
wonderful.
Yeah.
With okay.
Halloween. Okay.
Well, yeah. If you're interested, definitely check out our Patreon and Apple Premium.
Yeah.
For the extendable. Okay. Second question.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was terrible.
Oh, that was also terrible.
Let Hermione do it.
Okay. All right.
Why did you, Bill Weasley, not turn into an actual werewolf after Greyback's attack?
Oh, boy. Because Professor Lupin was there to guide me, and he helped me out. And I started eating steak that was more rare.
True, he did that, yeah.
So I think that was the key. And I don't think it had to do with any potion or... No, I don't know, actually. I don't know.
Mm. No.
That's a good one.
Mm.
Oh,
finish
that.
The key factor was because Fenrir was not transformed himself, so it didn't happen during a full moon.
Ah.
And he was still in human form.
When he attacked him.
That's why he only has, like, we don't know to
symptoms.
What extent.
Yeah.
But he doesn't ever turn into a full werewolf. He just, like you said, he now loves, like, red meat and, you know, like, his steaks and everything and has some tendencies.
I didn't even realize that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess, interesting you bring that up because thinking back on it, I'm like, oh yeah, at some point maybe he did turn into a werewolf, but no, he never does. That's not the case.
Yeah, that's what I had a misconception about that too. Mm-hmm. He never did.
Yeah, because you think he does with the scar on his face and stuff, mm-hmm. and you almost think like we just never get to see it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's just that there's like symptoms or side effects mm-hmm. from that attack or whatever.
Maybe he gets a little like, you know, weary and sick during the full moon, and Fleur has to take extra care of him.
Do you think he grew a little extra arm hair and stuff?
Oh,
like that?
Definitely.
Yeah,
yes.
Definitely. Yep. probably a little extra hair on his toes and whatnot. You know. Oh my gosh, that's interesting though. I like that. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Very fitting.
Okay.
What? You rescue these creatures?
Yes, that's right. Rescue, nurture, and protect them. I'm gently trying to educate my fellow wizards about them. Come on.
Time for some more magizoology knowledge.
Zoology.
Good job. Well, what do you think is
today's magical beast?
Yes.
I would say that it has something to do with Halloween. And it probably has something to do with a character in this chapter. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing maybe a troll. Wow. Okay.
Very good. I'm still trying to swallow that pumpkin spice donut. Sorry.
They're a little dry, aren't they?
Yeah, but with the pumpkin spice latte, it goes well.
Okay.
Yeah. Today, we'll take a closer look at the troll. According to Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the classification is 4 axis. And just to remind you...
Mm-hmm.
Whoop. Oh, wow. I'm just flipping through my book here. 4 axes means dangerous, requires specialist knowledge, and skilled wizard may handle.
Okay.
The highest is 5 axes. Okay. So the troll is a fearsome creature up to 12 feet tall and weighing over a ton. Notable for its equally prodigious? Prodigious.
Prodigious. Yeah.
Prodigious. Strength and stupidity. The troll is often violent and unpredictable. Trolls originated in Scandinavia, but these days they may be found in Britain, Ireland, and other areas of Northern Europe. Trolls generally converse in grunts that appear to constitute a crude language, though some have been known to understand and even to speak a few simple human words. The more intelligent of the species have been trained as guardians.
Mm-hmm.
There are 3 types of trolls: mountain troll, forest troll, and river troll. The mountain troll is the largest and most vicious. It is bald with a pale gray skin. The forest troll has a pale green skin, and some specimens have hair which is green or brown, thin and straggly. The river troll has short horns and may be hairy. So we'll get there.
Okay.
Harry, are you a river troll? It has a purplish skin and is often found lurking beneath bridges. Trolls eat raw flesh and are not fuzzy in their... Fuzzy? In their...
Yeah, fuzzy.
Oh, they're not fuzzy in their prey, which ranges from wild animals to humans.
Wait, they're not fussy.
Oh.
Fussy. Yeah. That's funny. That's
wow. Cute. Maybe sometimes you should read them. They're not fussy. You know, it's another language from another century.
Yeah, well, it's also the fact that I think when you're reading something, this happens to me all the time too, you read the words hairy, right? You read all these other things that would be similar
to fuzzy. Yeah.
And then so you see something like fussy and you say fuzzy.
Yeah.
Happens to me in professional development all the time as I'm reading in front of other teachers. And they're like, oh, you know, just go to the reading teacher over there. Let's just let him read out loud. Everyone has a great fear of reading out loud. And it's
Because all of a sudden the words, they just twist around and some endings are like they drop and, you know, they do all sorts of stuff in front of you.
If just real, as you're about to dive into the trolls here, which is totally gross. But we've been reading shorts, and so we, as Lottie reads now, we have now developed a habit where we're like rereading everything.
Yeah.
So if we ever forget to edit that out and you hear us reread the same line five times, we forgot to edit it out. And I think it's kind of funny. So just that's one of those you lay it down in case it ever happens sort of thing. But the trolls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's hear about them.
They possessed rudimentary magic, but it is not known how they applied it. So they have some kind of magic, but we don't really know how they use it.
Okay.
I guess like, you know, how Hagrid and giants have superhuman strength. Maybe they have some of that strength as well. Interesting. Troll whiskers had magical properties and were sometimes used as wand cores.
That is gross.
Though they were considered inferior to the supreme cores.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I wouldn't want a troll whisker in my wand.
No.
Skilled magical multilinguists such as Barty Crouch could understand troll language, and Professor Quirrell at least had some kind of gift communicating with them.
Whoa.
Which is super important and interesting for this chapter, even.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yep.
Some witches and wizards made a career out of training security trolls, which is cool. Like, you know, we were always wondering, what do wizards and witches do after Hogwarts? We have some typical jobs, like ministry jobs or teachers and all that stuff.
But training security trolls.
Yeah.
That's a cool one.
And a troll was Quirrell's contribution to guarding the Philosopher's Stone in the underground chambers during the 1991-92 school year, which is right now the chapter we're discussing, at Hogwarts.
Wait a second.
I know. You weren't going to bring us up. This is
We can wait. Right? We can wait.
We have to. We'll wait for the chapter.
I didn't know that. Wow.
We forget because it's not in the movie. In the movie, we see only some of the protective measurements that teachers took to protect the stone.
Right.
But there was actually a lot more in the book.
Right. Yep.
So.
Yep. I never thought about quarrels, though. Okay.
What do you think? Would you want to have or befriend a troll?
Yeah, no. No, not really. I know it's crazy, though, that Hagrid would say yes to that and sort of does later in the series, you know?
I think so, too, honestly. Where was Hagrid in this chapter?
Yeah, where was he at? Why was he down there kind of talking? I don't know. It makes me always think of when I think of trolls, the most famous trolls, again, it's a great move, by the way, to start off with a troll in your book. So J.K. Rowling bringing in a troll is great because in the Hobbit series, you have three trolls. You have, like, the three Billy Goats Gruff. And there's a troll, there's a river troll under the bridge, you know, guarding it or whatever. And I just think it's cool. People know what a troll is. And so when you do other types of, it sort of eases you into the magical world and fantastic beasts. So there's already, like a unicorn is mentioned. Well, we know what a unicorn is and we'll know what a troll is and stuff like that. Later down the line, we get into more that we're like, what is that?
You know?
And then she has to kind of explain
what's
those
the
more.
Or a hinky pong.
Yeah.
Or like
Yeah. Grindylow. And some of them might even be known like in, I don't know, not well known, but they're out there in the real world. We just don't know that they're not as well known. So it's cool when she brings them up later on. But
yeah.
So it's interesting. But I absolutely would not want a troll. There's no way.
Yeah.
No way.
Same. don't really want one.
Don't you already have one, though? Slam on me.
What are you talking
about? Slam on me. Sorry. That was funny.
No, you're not a troll.
I'm not a troll? Okay.
No. But, I mean, like, having one to guard something important, if you have them near your house or something.
It was
not,
a nice troll.
Like, if someone trains them for us and...
You know what I read in The Hobbit? I mean, those trolls were actually okay. They just were hungry.
Okay, yeah.
That's all they were just hungry for dwarves and hobbits. So,
yeah.
You know, otherwise, they're just doing their own thing. Now, yeah, I know. I guess guarding would be cool. That would be interesting. But other than that, I'm not really a huge fan of trolls. They're kind of gross. And actually, the way they do it in the film is awesome because that troll is totally gross and has major troll bogeys.
Mm-hmm.
Do they say bogeys? Is that how they say it?
How do you say it?
I don't know, boogers.
Boogers, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Bogies, yeah, I think bogies, that's how they say it, yeah.
It's crazy. Troll bogies.
British people.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
What do you got for Potter Watch?
Pop-up Potter Watch. So, friends, basically, as you're listening to this, the first, this is sort of news, I guess, around the fantasy realm. It's not necessarily related to Harry Potter. We got depressing news last week, which was that the Legacy game, Hogwarts Legacy, is going to be delayed, and so we're still a little bit sad about that, but that's okay.
Yeah.
We're picking ourselves back up here in terms of other fantasy news that's going on around other fandoms, and so I don't know if you guys know this or not, anyone who listens here, we have some people who followed over from other projects and some people who are brand new and who just love Harry Potter, but I do run other projects, and so if you are interested in like Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones or even Star Wars, all three of those have major like TV shows coming out this in the next month. And we had one that just came out on this past Sunday, which is House of the Dragon. So season one, episode one.
Yeah.
Covering that over on Bend the Knee. And then we have Rings of Power, which is coming out. My buddy Lane and I are going to be covering that. It's phenomenal. And I think in terms of like what's closer, like Harry Potter, the sort of the hero journey, like the hero arc, very much more relatable to Tolkien's work and Lord of the Rings.
And the movies came out at the same time, and they had all sorts of like comparisons between Frodo and Harry, or like the actors Daniel Radcliffe and
Elijah Wood.
Yeah. So fun. Because they do look a lot alike.
They do a little bit, right? Yeah, I know. What's a Harry Potter doing over there in Lord of the Rings? they're just a lot of fun. And the other one, so even Star Wars, which is more like, I know it's classified as like sci-fi. It's really fantasy. It's really just sort of the hero arc in mythology with like Luke Skywalker and stuff. And this will be the Andor series that's coming out on September 21st. But it's a lot of fun. And so if you haven't had a chance or you want to get into those fandoms, Lottie is on Rings of Power. She is on our Lord of the Rings podcast. And so she's been on there multiple times. And I've also had her on our Hyperspace podcast. Those sort of just fit more. I do one with Matt as well, which is our Bend the Knee podcast. It's more adult. And so I will caution you that it's a bit more adult level stuff. So, you know, that's sort of that.
What's adult?
Well, yeah.
I don't know what an adult is.
Well, it's rated R. So you won't be watching it, young lady. All right. But no, that's really just the big news. I think next week we'll have some more. We'll do a little deeper dive down the Potter.
Yeah, I thought we were going to share why the egg actually exploded is because we got news that the episode, the first one or two episodes of Rings of Power will release in theaters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's the news. Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, full circle there. That's what we were talking about when the eggs exploded. Thank you. That they're going to do this release. And actually, you talk about a really good idea in terms of like marketing and just strategy. So if you're not on the Prime app, they're basically saying they're going to give away free tickets to go to the theater and watch the first or second, I think it's the first two episodes. And they're letting people do that on Wednesday night. And then so the following week, if you want to watch episodes 3 and 4, you have to kind of subscribe to Prime.
Yeah.
But they're letting you get tickets for free, anybody That's who wants awesome. To kind of go get those. And it's sort of bringing people back to the movie theater and getting popcorn and candy and pop and whatever. And so that's good for the theater. It's sort of a nice little partnership and everything. But yeah, cool. I think it's a cool little strategy.
Mm-hmm. Bad for your teeth.
Oh, very bad for your teeth. Yeah, sorry.
Just like this pumpkin spice latte.
Yeah, just wanted to throw that out there. brush your teeth morning and night, by the way, kids. So that's really our news. Mm-hmm. Just, there's other big things kind of going on, and then once those shows are over, we're really hoping to switch gears and get into our Hogwarts legacy like hype. Yeah. Because I was having so much fun. We have shorts over on Harry Potter Hangout talking about the professors. Mm-hmm. Little leaks are coming out, little nuggets. I'm actually okay with the delay because maybe it's going to be better and it's going to be cool. So
yeah, and Christmas is going to be busy anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Going to be over in Germany and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Gimme.
There's news, yes.
Mm-hmm. Gimme your spooky, as we're slithering into the main part here, gimme your spooky announcement of the summary.
Spooky announcement of the summary.
Gimme a spooky voice.
Spooky voice, I think, here. It's time for the summary of Halloween.
Oh my gosh, that's not like bad.
That. Something like that, okay.
Yeah. Okay. I'm trying to channel something here, but it's not going to work.
Do you want to keep up with that? You want to, you know, like
that was pretty good. You set the bar pretty high.
Do you think you could read it that way? Try that, just that little, what's the first line of the summary? Let me look at the summary here.
While Harry and Ron are pleased with their nightly adventure.
You turned into a pirate. Oh my gosh. That sounded like, you know, Mr. Crab. From SpongeBob. While Harry and Ron are pleased with their nightly adventure, Hermione isn't so much, and she refuses to talk to them for the next couple of days.
Oh, you know who I was trying to channel?
Was that Mr. Crab? Yeah, who were you trying to channel?
Gollum.
Oh, boy. Oh.
Smeagol.
Wow, I don't even know. I can't do a Gollum. That's a hard one to do. That's
fine. Yeah.
Okay, we'll just switch to regular so we don't embarrass ourselves.
Okay, you ready for rock, paper, scissors?
Rock, paper, scissors. Here we go. Okay. Ready? Ready? Here we go.
Okay.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. I don't know if you've noticed this, but like every single time I have beat you.
And every single time you use the stone.
Yeah, every single time I've beaten you.
I definitely. Ugh. I will edit this anyway.
Okay, there's.
Whoa.
So many donuts. I feel like it's the attack of the donut. You only had like a nibble on that one. Are you saving that for me or what?
It's the spice.
Wow. Okay.
And yes, I'm saving it for you. I'm sorry. I apologize already for the complicated and complex sentences and stuff.
It's okay. I'm ready for
it. But I know you can do it.
Here we go. While Harry and Ron are pleased with their nightly adventure, Hermione isn't so much and refuses to talk to them for the next couple of days. Harry and Ron's morning gets even better when a large, long package arrives for Harry. The new Gryffindor seeker has received a personal gift from Professor McGonagall, a Nimbus 2000. Malfoy is furious, and Harry and Ron can't help themselves but to rub it in his face. Later that night, Oliver Wood is delighted by Harry's spectacular first practice flight on the Nimbus. The theme of defying gravity continues the next morning in their charms lesson. Professor Flitwick teaches the class how to use Wingardium Leviosa to make objects fly. Ron and Hermione have to pair up and practice together. Their annoyance with each other reaches a climax when Hermione tries to correct Ron and even shows him how to perform the spell perfectly. Later after the lesson, Ron loudly complains about her to Harry. Hermione overhears them, and she runs away to the bathroom with tears in her eyes. Ron does feel a little uncomfortable about it throughout the day, but soon forgets when they enter the spooky-looking Great Hall, full of bats swooping around and candlelit pumpkins floating in the air. It's October 31st. Right when the Halloween feast is about to start, Professor Quirrell rushes into the hall. With panic in his eyes, he informs everyone that there is a troll in the dungeon, and he faints in front of the staff table. Dumbledore immediately orders all prefects to lead the students into their common rooms. Percy Weasley is on fire, but Harry... Percy Weasley is on fire, but Ron and Harry exchange nervous looks. Hermione hasn't showed up yet, and she's got no idea that there's a giant wandering troll in the castle. They decided to sneak off and to find her, and soon realize that the beast has left the dungeons when they encounter him in a corridor. Harry and Ron manage to lock the troll into a room, but their hearts sink to their knees when they hear a high-pitched scream from that very room, which turned out to be the girls' bathroom. They had just locked Hermione in with a mountain troll. The two Gryffindor boys naturally hurry to her rescue and manage to defeat the troll with a lot of confusion and a perfect performance of the hovering charm by Ronald Weasley. The troll is knocked out. Hermione is rescued, but the teachers arriving at the scene are not exactly thrilled. Cough. Should I be coughing there? Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Sorry.
The troll is knocked out. Hermione is rescued, but the teachers arriving at the scene are not exactly thrilled. Minerva. Oh, sorry. You would do it again?
No, it was great.
Okay. Okay. Hermione, however, stands up for the boys' courage, twists the story slightly to their advantage so they at least earn a small amount of house points. Back in the Gryffindor common room, the three of them all murmur a soft thank you at the same time, and from that moment on, they are friends. They just became what we now know as the trio. Wow, let's just say your sentence structure is wonderful.
It's very German, I think.
No, I will say this. It's actually really good, though. It's complex, you know what I mean? I'm trying to teach my students to write in complex compound sentences.
But it's hard to read it.
It's hard to read it, though, let me tell you, especially when there's coughs in there and stuff.
Oh, my God, that was great.
Wow. We are just coughing up pumpkin spice donuts today.
You did it perfectly, though.
Oh, okay.
It was so funny.
Okay, good.
Okay.
I mean, it's interesting. So as we start into this chapter, that they are pleased. Have you ever been on an adventure where, like, you almost were in big trouble?
Yes.
And in the moment, you're sort of whispering this silent prayer that's like, please, I will never do this again.
Yeah.
Just get me out of here alive. Just let me make it through. I don't want to get caught. I don't want to get in trouble, and I will never do this again. That is literally what Harry and Ron were doing the night before on their way to that duel. And so, but then you wake up the next day and you're sort of like, well, that was fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But in the moment, literally just last night, you were scared to death.
Happened this morning.
In the moment we were like, oh my gosh, we just exploded the house. But then we laughed about it 20 minutes later. But you know, I've done that actually. Speaking of Halloween, we have an old haunted mansion just down the road here from where I grew up, and it has, like, it was abandoned. It was like this abandoned building, and we snuck into it.
I was gonna tell the same story. When I was in elementary school, we had an abandoned factory which had like actual explosives on the property. Like, it said, please keep a distance of minimum of 7 meters or something. And we as kids thought it was cool. Sorry, you continue your story. I just thought it was interesting that we shared.
We can intermingle these because let me just, in comparison, there were no explosives in the building I was in. What is wrong with you?
They were outside in containers, but it says, please keep your distance. We don't know. Explosive. We as kids made up it's explosives.
They might have not even
They
been.
Probably just, weren't, but yeah, we but. Thought like, oh, you. It, they said keep a distance of
so,
7 meters.
Okay, here's a true story, and I can't believe I'm telling this story right now. My sister and I, we snuck over to that haunted mansion. It once was sort of they called it the poorhouse. By the way, anyone who wants to look up something really cool.
The one you showed me?
Mm-hmm. So anyone out there who wants to look up something, kind of a cool fact about Knox County, where I grew up in the local town here, look up the Knox County poorhouse, and you will see one of the scariest buildings you've ever seen. Actually, back then it probably looked pretty good. It was actually at one point the tallest building in the state of Ohio.
Ooh.
Which is pretty it was like 4 stories, but it had that fifth in the about like the tower that was on top of it or whatever. So that sort of technically made it, I think, high. I think at the time, and I think that was only like 6 months, and then it was like not the tallest, you know what I mean? But at one point I think it was. And so anyways, it's a super spooky, scary building. And my sister and I go walking into that when we were little. We decided to go check it out and just walk in the back. And I remember my sister, she's pretty bold. She's pretty we'll do anything, you know? And so we're going in. We step 1 foot inside and the temperature drops like crazy. Chills.
Whoa.
She showed me her arm and she was like, look at that. I'm like, every hair on my body was standing up. And I was like, let's leave. And she was like, yeah. Normally she would argue and say like, no, let's press on. But I was like, it was like middle of the day too. It wasn't like it was like nighttime or anything. It was like hot outside and we stepped inside. And it wasn't just like, oh, you stepped into the shade.
Mm-hmm.
No, this was a different type of cold settling in. And so, you know, we definitely hustled out of there, you know, and then thought, let's go back later. You know what I mean? It's one of those, just like Harry and Ron, you're sort of like, yeah, we shouldn't be here. And then later on, you're like, we should go back.
Yeah.
Let's just try it out. So I thought that was kind of funny.
It's like when you have that entire rest of the cake or something, and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. Let's like, was the worst decision ever. And the next morning, you're like, that was pretty good cake. Is there another piece?
Is it still around here?
You're like, I'm never going to do that again. Well,
I know. I know. Okay. But that happens with him quite a bit. So it's just kind of funny because it relates to real life, whatever. So,
yeah.
Again, so Neville doesn't seem to want to talk about it. Hermione doesn't want to talk about it. It's just not something that they're interested in.
Hermione is mad.
Yeah, she's mad.
But I think it's a really good build up to their friendship at the end of the chapter. So,
yeah, I think it's just she has a standard that she thinks Gryffindors and the other people in the house should live up to.
Yeah, she's
and
very proud of her house.
Yeah, that they're not is sort of like, what? Come on, you know?
Yeah.
Actually, paralleling real life again here as I get into the school year, students who are working on a group project, this happens all the time.
Yes.
Which is like, okay, I'm not going to suffer because you guys are slacking. Yeah. So therefore, I'm going to take on all the work, do the project, and then those guys are going to be like, she's got it for us.
Yeah.
That happens all the time. And so I'm always like telling teachers too, just to kind of, you know, be on the lookout for that, by the way, because, you know, those I don't know. I feel like you should reward those kids who are kind of carrying the project. And I mean, I think even if you were a kid who was loafing on it and you were like, okay, the person who actually did the project is going to get extra credit, you'd be like, yeah, fair. We're just glad we didn't have to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't. I doubt you're like going to fight for the extra credit. You're just going to be like, yeah, good. Give it to her. She deserves it.
We started doing that at our school where whenever there was group projects, that the group members got to anonymously grade the other group members too.
Yeah. Yep.
So that it, you know, you don't have to know if someone wasn't as active.
Yeah, yeah.
But also you can reward the person who did all the work.
Right. And you also want to watch out for things, you know, kids ganging up on one kid or something. But at the same time, most kids, you know, if you have a group of five and like four of them are like, this kid did nothing. Sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, and
especially
then also,
if it's anonymous, you're like, I can be honest here.
Right. And then as the year goes on, do you kind of watch for that kind of stuff? And so I don't know. You know, there's pros and there's cons to group work. But anyway, she's proud and she definitely expects better of them, and they almost got in major trouble. That's not like a little sort of infraction that they were kind of – they were messing with the pretty big, you know, being out after bed, and then they ended up being in that corridor that's forbidden. So it turned into a catastrophe. And then also she was right, and they don't come back and acknowledge that.
No, yeah.
So that also hurts. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because sometimes when you're the person who's right and you're like, you don't even want to say, I told you so, you're actually just sort of waiting for them to say, hey, you were right.
Yeah.
And then they don't even want to say it. Most people don't want to say, hey, I told you so.
Right.
They warned you because they didn't want you to get in that trouble to begin with. So it's all, I think it's, we're not to the words of wisdom yet, but I feel like that is some of it, right? Which is that, like, if you were told something, that person, people are always worried about getting burned, like going back to the person like Hermione and saying, hey, you were right. And she's like, yeah, I know. I told you so. Most people are sort of like, in the future, just don't, you know, like they don't really want. There are people out there who are going to try to burn you and rub it in your face. But I feel like most people aren't going to do that. They're genuinely looking out. Neville wants nothing to do with it at the start of this. He doesn't want to talk about it at all. He's scared to death still, probably.
He never wants to go near that corridor again.
But things sort of shift, right? We get all this, you know, I just love the morning going in, they're sort of still talking about how awesome that was. They're actually speculating on the package and the size and what could it be and what was stolen. And, you know, it could either be dangerous, right, or valuable. And Harry says both.
Yeah.
It's probably both. It's probably dangerous and super valuable.
I mean, he's right.
And he's right. He's absolutely right. So but you know, you imagine two kids kind of speculating about what that might be. So that's fun. And then they've got their breakfast. And then the mail is being delivered. And we have a massive package delivered. I love that it's probably in more like a, I don't know that it was, they don't really describe it as what we see in the film.
Broom shaped package. It was, can I tell you this little story here?
Yes.
One day I posted on TikTok a little video of us rewatching the movie, and it was the exact same scene where Harry gets the package, and it looks exactly like a broom just with paper wrapped around it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was like somebody commented on that TikTok, I wonder what that is, a broom shaped package. Let's you know, unwrap it real quick.
Right. That's a broom, or just, it's a broom shaped package. Maybe it's a broom.
It's funny. It's kind of funny. Yeah. And in the movie, they do unwrap it right away at the table.
Right. Yes, they do. And McGonagall's even happy about it. She's just sort of like giving him that wink, like, yeah, I did that.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of cool because that's one of those things I bet like J.K. Rowling was sort of like, I could have went either way with this, but I chose this path, and so you guys can do it this way in the film. Maybe not. Maybe it was screenwriters, but I love when authors do that, when they open it up to like, I had two sort of paths here. They both work and they're both okay. Just like what they do later on with Dumbledore and whether he can apparate in or out of Hogwarts. You know, and the film sort of says like, you know, or which one is it? Where it's the film and he's like, I'm the headmaster. I can do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or like in the books, I think it's sort of like, no, we have to be outside the gate.
Yeah.
Hogwarts is more powerful than Dumbledore.
Right.
Whereas in the film, Dumbledore's more powerful than Hogwarts, which is kind of a... two different ways that you can kind of go about it, which is cool.
Yeah.
So they take the package, though. And again, this is from McGonagall. Professor McGonagall gives him a Nimbus 2000. Now, my question is, did she buy that with her own money, school funds, or did she charge Harry for that? Because, like, maybe he would have bought it himself, but just wasn't allowed to. What?
I don't believe she charged him anything for
me
it
neither.
Because I mean, like,
she wouldn't do that.
No, because he could have, if who knows if he made the, I mean, yeah, you're right, probably he would have bought the same exact broom, the best of the best, but because he could afford it. But no, I'd actually think that maybe she teamed up with Dumbledore.
I think it's for the school. Here's the thing, I think it's a purchase for the school. And it's one of those things that, like, he's an exception because, like, had they have opened... Because second years can bring their broom.
Yeah.
Apparently. You know what I mean? Which, so, he doesn't because he's not allowed to. And they didn't know. It's very rare to have a seeker or someone who can join the team who's this quality. So, I feel like it's definitely a school activity-related purchase.
Yeah.
I'm trying to defend McGonagall here, okay? Because I love her.
If you buy a student a broom, and she was like, probably
well, she even said in the letter, she's like, don't open it in front of everybody else, so they're all gonna want
they
one.
They all want one. And I'm like, yeah, because it's not fair what you're doing.
But do you know what, I'm kind of okay with this because I have always liked the little subtleness at which McGonagall is super stern, super strict, and she bends this one little rule, and it has to do with like Quidditch. And it's because actually the benefit to it is that, okay, the school's more competitive. Her team's more competitive. It all around is I think, a school function. It's a school activity.
Yeah, it is.
No one else was going to take that spot. They don't really get into and again, this is the first book. They're not really getting into tryouts yet, which we learn about later. It's not like Harry was trying out against other seekers. Just Gryffindor didn't have a lot of people who played Quidditch or who wanted to or whatever. And so she found one.
Yeah.
So, yes.
I'm kind of imagining, you know, when you have like special school fundings or more money to spend than you thought, you kind of have to write an extra letter and explain how you
get a little approval. Well, I'm guessing she had to do that. And here's the thing, too. That slip, maybe she did have to fill out like a form and it had to go to the Ministry of Magic or something or the school board.
Maybe,
And they probably looked at it and like, well, hold on. And at first, they're sort of like, no, I don't think so. And they're like, oh, Harry Potter.
Never mind.
Harry. So they're kind of like, go on ahead. And it's funny how that shifts. She did a great job, I think, throughout the whole series of like, even with Fudge, you know, Harry, he loves him.
Yeah.
Oh, don't worry, you blow up your aunt. Happens every day. Don't worry about it. To, oh, you were defending yourself from Dementors. You're expelled.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, you know, it. She does a great job of sort of making that evolve, letting that evolve and stuff, which I think is awesome. But, you know, Professor McGonagall is always kind of, she's watching over these kids. And again, he doesn't have parents. He doesn't have guidance on this.
Right.
He doesn't have a parent who could maybe even write a petition to the school to sort of say, hey, you know, you don't have a seeker, etc. Sorry.
This totally reminds me of when we discussed the first chapter and just McGonagall standing there looking at baby Harry, having like,
all
this motherly feelings and like sadness that he just lost his parents. And it's kind of like, you know, 11 years later or 10 years later, she just wants to give him something back, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And she saw what the Dursleys were like when she was waiting for Dumbledore all that, you know, the whole day.
You know what's interesting? A lot of the professors, you just brought up like her motherly sort of love for Harry.
Yeah.
And she is, again, each of them being sort of head of house. They are overseeing sort of their children, their students, right. their what at the school. But like, we don't really get much. And as I believe McGonagall was married. I believe she was married at one point. I don't believe she ever had children. It just made me think for a hot second.
I don't think so either.
How cool would that have been if there were, you know, another young Professor McGonagall showing up and he or she was, you know, going to be around for some new series or whatever. Yeah. But just kind of cool. Just thinking about all the different professors and stuff. So anyway, all right. So they take the broom and they're moving on. Malfoy is furious. He is shocked that they're still there. He thought for sure they were going to get caught, and they're not. He grabs that broom. By the way, this is something I think the teachers need to address. He is just taking things out of kids, you know, hands. He's taking the
right.
the remembrall. Yeah. He's taking the broom, and I would tell him, keep your hands to yourself. That's what I tell the kids.
Yeah.
Don't touch your stuff. That's their stuff. That's your stuff. Yeah, there we go. But he often does that. He's going to give it right back, but he definitely wants to just this is more of, you know, his character goes in there, grabs it, feels it up. It's a broom. You're going to get in trouble for that, blah, 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 blah. And then Flitwick shows up of all people. And he's trying to report Flitwick on this, like, hey, Harry's got a broom.
Yeah.
And Flitwick's, oh yeah, I know. I heard all about it. Congratulations, Harry. Nimbus 2000.
No.
Let's go, Gryffindor.
I know. And then the best part, it's really thanks to Malfoy here. Slam.
Oh yeah, slam, slam. Really gonna thank Malfoy for this one.
Yeah,
and he's probably he's again fuming.
Mm-hmm.
Now the thing is too, and where I think that it's a little unfair, and I've always wanted to try to see things. I'm very open to seeing things from like Slytherin's perspective, because Malfoy, I think he very well could have been a seeker, and maybe they didn't have a great seeker, for the Slytherin team. I actually think he's probably pretty good. Really,
mm-hmm.
really. I know, like, Madame Hooch, like, says he's mounting his broom wrong or has been doing that wrong for years or whatever. But I have to imagine that he's very smart. He's very gifted. I think in the next book, when Lucius Malfoy shows up, he talks a lot about Draco's Malfoy.
Oh,
Draco.
I forgot the name of our ghoul.
Brule. Brule's back. but Draco, it's like his grades are really good. They're just not as good as Hermione's.
Right.
So keep that in mind. He gets really good grades, and I don't think he gets those just based on, you know, the fact that he's a Malfoy or that his father's paying or on the governor's board or anything like that. I think he really is a talented wizard, and I think he would really be good at Quidditch.
I think so too, yeah.
He probably could have even made the Quidditch team, perhaps, but they're just not allowed. There's that first year sort of thing. By the way, it reminds me of college, like freshmen who go off to college, like Kenyon College just down the road. If you're ever in the area again, check out Kenyon College. Beautiful little campus. You can't bring your car there as a freshman. Freshmen are not allowed to drive their cars. They get dropped off and they're stuck there. So kind of funny. But anyway, yeah. So that's sort of the little run in there with Flitwick. And
I
thought that was funny. Did you have something you wanted to?
Absolutely. I know it's getting a little long here.
It's okay.
But
it's okay.
This is just, I wish I could show you it right now, but
okay.
I know you have your tiny little screen there. And I'm going to keep it short. But as you asked about Professor McGonagall's marriage, she had a couple of like little, so there was a early heartbreak love story. And then later on, some stuff in between. This is a whole article on Wizarding World, probably taken from Pottermore.
Okay.
Written by J.K. Rowling. Through all her early years at Hogwarts, McGonagall remained on terms of friendship with her old boss at the ministry. She used to work for the ministry. Elphinstone Urquhart.
Urquhart, okay.
He came to visit her while on holiday to Scotland and to her great surprise and embarrassment, proposed marriage in Madame Puddyfoot's tea shop.
Whoa.
Still in love with her old heartbreak love, Dougal MacGregor. Oh my goodness.
MacGregor? What?
Minerva turned him down. Elphinstone, however, had never ceased to love her, nor to propose every now and then, even though she continued to refuse him. The death of Dougal MacGregor, however, although traumatic, seemed to free Minerva. Oh my god, this is so deep. I don't want to go too deep on this, but shortly after Voldemort's first defeat, Elphinstone, now white-haired, proposed again during a summertime stroll around the lake in the Hogwarts grounds. This time, Minerva accepted. Elphinstone, now retired, was beside himself with joy and purchased a small cottage in Hogsmeade for the pair of them.
No way.
When Minerva could travel easily to work every day. This reminds me so much of Downton Abbey right now.
This is awesome.
Known to successive generations of students as Professor McGonagall, Minerva, always something of a feminist, announced that she would be keeping her own name upon marriage. Traditionalists sniffed. Why was Minerva refusing to accept a pureblood name and keeping that of her Muggle father? The marriage, cut tragically short, though it was destined to be, was a very happy one. Though they had no children of their own, Minerva's nieces and nephews, children of her brothers Malcolm and Robert, were frequent visitors to their home. This was a period of great fulfillment for Minerva. The accidental death of Elphinstone from a venomous tentacular bite 3 years into their marriage was an enormous sorrow to all who knew the couple. Minerva could not bear to remain alone in their cottage, but packed her things after Elphinstone's funeral and returned to her sparse stone-floored bedroom in Hogwarts Castle.
Wow.
Accessible through a concealed door in the wall of her first-floor study. Always a very brave and private person, she poured all her energies into her work, and few people, excepting perhaps Albus Dumbledore, ever realized how much she suffered. Oh my goodness.
Wow, you got me. I'm shook over here. I didn't expect that. On Halloween. Wow.
We have to have...
That's crazy.
We have to have a full... I mean, there's so much more to her story, but this blew me away. I'm so sorry I interrupted like our chapter discussion, really.
That's okay. It's fine, because we think about things along the way that I hadn't thought about. You know, I hadn't thought about whether McGonagall had children or relationships and stuff like that. So that's actually really cool and that's cool to know, you know, like Pottermore / the Wizarding World, that we're getting, that you get articles like that. I have not read all of them, so as they come up, we will feature them. We'll bring them up,
yes,
because I think it's cool, you know. It adds context to all of our characters. It sort of it just expands them. So
yeah.
Wow. I'm a little heartbroken over here.
And her, I mean, I haven't read the entire story, but there was something going on with
McGregor
before that okay, she loved that person.
Well, maybe we'll do.
Maybe we'll follow
up in an extendable on something more with that, because that's pretty cool.
Yes. Agreed.
Okay. All right. Well, so anyway, Flitwick, you know, has his moment. They later that night. Again, Oliver is there, and they go out and they practice, and he is blown away. He explains the bludgers. He explains something really interesting, that the seeker is often fouled the most, because you don't want him to catch that snitch in time.
Yeah.
So you would try to, if he's getting close, we're going to foul him. You would be willing to take a penalty shot, right? Or give the other team a penalty shot just so they don't get that 150, close the game, and win it all, right? You want to prolong the game as long as possible. So you can imagine he's getting taken, a lot of bludgers are coming his way, and it's up to Fred and George to kind of defend him a little bit, defend the team. It's really cool the way they describe Quidditch, and it takes a little while to kind of understand it. It's definitely different. The point system is so crazy to think that you can have this competitive game. Really, you know, there's moments where you wouldn't want to catch the snitch if you're down, you know, more than 150.
It is so wild to me that it is worth 150 points. Like, if 50 points would be, I think, a better... I don't know. Like, 150 points seems so much, like 15 goals worth of points.
Yeah, I mean, you could have...
That's a lot.
Well, it does show you how one seeker can change the game, though. How the seeker could be... This sort of almost like the quarterback of your football team. Like they have a star player who could really change the game. If you don't have a good seeker, but you have awesome, you know, chasers or whatever, and you have people scoring quite a bit and an excellent keeper, well, then you could rack up a lot of points fast, and then you get to the point where, like, the other team... Now, again, if you just keep going beyond that 300... Like, if you're above, let's say you're at 170 or 170, whatever, 80, 90, 200, and the other team's at zero.
Yeah.
They don't want to catch the snitch.
Right.
So
then
then, though, does is that your seeker, if they don't want to catch it, they might just be trying to keep the other team's seeker off the snitch, which, if you have a less, I guess if your seeker is less, they're not as good as the other team's, but the other team's is not trying to go for it, then you might have the opportunity to catch it and win the game.
I know, but...
You know, a lot of different strategies and stuff.
It takes a lot, though, to make up for a bad seeker. Like, a lot. you know?
Yes, it would take a lot. You have to...
That's why I think they were so desperate to find a good seeker, because if you don't have a good seeker, you're screwed, kind of.
Is it 10 points, though? Is it per goal kind of thing? I think it is.
Yes, it is. That's why 10. I'm saying it's 15 goals that you have to score to just even out. If the other team has zero and then catches the cinch, it's even.
Right. Right, exactly. Yeah. So up until that point, up until the first 150 points, though, it's anybody's game, and it's just everyone's just pushing hard.
Yeah.
But if you know you've got a weak seeker and a good seeker on the other side, you're hoping to rack up a huge lead, and then maybe your seeker gets in there and has a chance or whatever.
A part of me wishes, though, it would be less. It's still powerful if you get 50 or 60 points extra on top.
Mm-hmm.
Could still change the entire game if you're 5 goals behind and then you catch the cinch, you know?
Right, right.
Anyway.
So, anyways, I think that's pretty... It's pretty cool. So, the next morning, though, we get into the... we get back with Flitwick and into Charms. And we're practicing that wand movement. That awesome little swish
and flick.
Shout out to them, by the way.
Switch and flick.
You want to practice. It's cool, too, to hear that there's a wand movement... A wrist movement with also this incantation, right? So you have to sort of say this thing. You have to say Wingardium Leviosa.
Yes.
Right? As well as do it at the exact same time and probably even hit those syllables as you're, you know, doing the swish and flick movement. So I think that's pretty neat, actually. And you find out that Hermione's probably already been able to do this in her... I'm not so sure if they're allowed to practice magic. I think you would imagine they can practice it in the castle to some degree, but she's probably making stuff float in her
bedroom.
Just
not in the corridors, I think,
Yeah. Yes.
Because you mentioned pronunciation is pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
What Flitwick mentions here, Wizard Baruffio, remember that?
Baruffio, yeah.
He's like, remember Baruffio who pronounced something different, and then he had a buffalo on his chest?
A buffalo on his chest, yeah.
I looked him up, and he was a wizard with a speech impediment.
Oh!
And I was like, if you have a speech impediment, you cannot perform magic.
Well, you have to do wordless.
The right way. Oh, wow.
I bet you would quickly get to some wordless magic, you know what I mean?
We need special education for wizards, which is...
Yeah. Yeah, because you want to set up a whole other path there where, like, this is what, you know, if you can't say it, then you need other ways to kind of... just ways to kind of...
Work around it, or how to practice the right pronunciation, maybe something that helps you.
Yeah, a lot of sing-songy, like singing it versus, you know, speaking it helps a lot, too. With that.
I wonder if the stuttering, I know Cruel is just faking the stuttering, but if stuttering also has an effect on
for sure, I bet it would.
You know?
I bet it would. Well, and even if you're using, Harry, when he's using the flu network, right, coughs a bit of it, and he ends up in completely the wrong spot. So saying the right words at the right time, it's very witchy, feels very, gotta say the right thing. So, interesting. So anyways, Ron, this is where Ron gets really upset. He's paired with Hermione. Harry's with Seamus. Seamus blows their little feather up or whatever. Ron's trying it. Hermione's like, let me show you. And he just makes a rude comment. And he's like, well, if you're so good at it, then you go ahead and do it. And she's like, yeah, I've done this. Okay, here we go. No problem. I was trying to let you go first and have a moment, but since you can't pull it off, I'm going to go ahead and do it for you. I'm going to go ahead and do it. And so she gets the praise, and then he's just kind of sitting there, you know, a little upset. And really, it's this after class where he says something super mean and super rude about Hermione, and she's just a couple people back and hears it and then rushes past them and bumps into them to let them know that I heard you.
Yeah.
And goes to the bathroom and cries. Awful.
Can I tell you something?
Yes.
I am, no matter where I am, I'm always uncomfortable if people start talking about other people, like loudly and not the nicest, they don't say the nicest things about them. And I always feel like, what if they hear, you know, what if they're somewhere around us or hear it? Or I just always feel uncomfortable when people, no matter where we are, and if I know the people are miles away, but...
Yeah.
It's just not...
Can I tell you a funny story? It's not funny, and it's not also... Yeah. You got to be careful. My dad is one of the nicest people that you'll ever meet.
Yes, I know.
Wonderful. You know, he went to church this morning, probably preached up a storm and everything. So he, though, was out at a job recently, and he said something about this pile of bricks that was supposed to be moved. And as you say, I'm like sitting here thinking, okay, you know, we don't need to say anything about it. He's even just... didn't realize they've got cameras. Yeah. They've got cameras around the thing, and they probably heard him say that he was just all he was grumpy about the them being there and thinking, I can't do my job now because these
are here. He was painting, yeah.
And I need to get to this spot or whatever. Well, and then that person clearly comes out, but I'm like, thank goodness you didn't say anything else. You know what I mean? Like, thank goodness you weren't like going on and on about it. Yeah. And then he's like, he said to me, that was fast. Like, they came out and started moving the bricks or whatever. He's like, is that a coincidence? I was like, no, there are cameras, and I guarantee they heard you say that. So, like, you got to be careful.
Yeah.
You know, just try not to say anything, you know, mean about people.
That's actually a good advice.
Yeah. You know, something that's interesting, I think about this when I'm starting a new school year, and you get in the teacher's lounge and whatever, and people want to gossip and stuff. And it's just, I very much try to avoid that because it makes me feel uneasy. Yeah. I'm like, and then I'm watching them when it's happening, and I'm like, you guys are all checking the door because you're just waiting for that person to walk past. So if you have to check the door constantly, don't you think it's probably something you shouldn't be saying?
Yeah.
And maybe you should just let it go. I mean, there's venting, I understand, to some degree.
Yeah.
But then sometimes these like, venting gossip sessions go on for months. And you're like, okay, it was like 3 months ago. The person's been awesome ever since. Like, they made a mistake.
Right,
like, so what?
You only see one side of the story.
Yeah,
or one.
Like, it's just, I don't know. Yeah. I try to steer clear of that, and I try to avoid it myself, too. It's not, we all have done. I mean, if you're out sitting out there thinking you haven't done, people have participated into some degree or whatever, but just to be if you're more aware of it, if you're aware that you're doing it or you're participating in it, you're less likely to be involved in it.
Yes.
Unless you really want to be involved in it or something. But I think a lot of people, the more I started like looking at myself and thinking like, where am I? Who am I around? What am I hearing?
Mm.
What type of energies are like coming into my mind and stuff? Yeah. Because even Harry's getting kind of caught up in this.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And doesn't really necessarily need to.
Yeah.
And is kind of smirking, and they kind of like they're both kind of jerks. People often put this on Ron a lot, but Harry, if you go back to the last couple of chapters, he hasn't been happy with Hermione, and he's like, he's not really verbalizing it, but we, the reader, are in on his thoughts and his demeanor and his actions, and he's not, he even says, like, he's not going to tell Hermione she was right, I mean, sort of last chapter.
Yes.
So, okay, don't put it all on Ron, because it's definitely both of them.
And poor Hermione, she's been having trouble making friends with the other girls, too,
because
she's sharing a dormitory with Lavender, Parvati, and who else? I'm trying to think.
Ooh.
But
good trivia question.
Yeah, they're friend, like Lavender and Parvati are like super close, and she's kind of struggling to
kind of on the outs.
Yeah, she's more like on her own, and then later on she just hangs out with the boys. And
you know, something else too to kind of be aware of, and whether it's in yourself or your kids or students or whatever, is the people who, you know, they come in with a lot of knowledge and they make up. Hermione's just being herself.
Yeah.
Truly just being herself, and she's just a little bookworm, and she happens to know all these different things or whatever. And I know some people are like, well, that makes me feel a little bit inferior or whatever, or that makes me feel a little like, I don't know, I didn't read the chapter or whatever. That's okay. That's who you are. That's who she is. It's tough because sometimes we just compare ourselves too much to each other.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of a bummer because Hermione, I think she's sort of in the minority in terms of like kids who are coming in their first year having read all the books and memorized everything and really on top of her class. So that kind of makes you stand out more. And here's something too. So I get this at work sometimes, which is like, if I start something early, like let's say I've sent out like a certain email or an accommodation sheet to my staff early, other staff members are like, oh, who does he think, you know what I mean? Who does he think he is sending out something before all of us? Well, somebody has to send out somebody has to be first. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to do it so I don't forget it. It's not me trying to put it in your guys' face like, oh, I already got mine done. It's really just, I don't want to forget it.
And you have the relief
and I just want to
it's done.
Do
I can
it.
Move just, on to the next thing.
Yeah. And I'm also not coming to you guys saying like, oh, hey, you guys were second, third, and fourth. Like, it doesn't matter. But some people make it matter. And that's the, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry. Anyways, trying to do a little self to text connection there, connecting everything to our real lives and whatnot. Okay. But yeah, so she hears and she runs away, tears in her eyes. She doesn't go to class the rest of the day. So this really did upset her. Yeah, because I think she was trying to, you know, sort of be a leader in her own house and among the first years, and they don't like her. And she's sort of like, I'm doing what's right.
sad.
Like, I'm earning us points. I'm doing what's right. Why don't people like me? This is ridiculous. Yeah. And it is, really. It is kind of. And it's hard because kids are kids, and kids are mean sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, okay, moving on. We are, it's October 31st, and we're rolling into the Great Hall, which is full of bats.
Yeah, full of bats, full of pumpkins, and they have a feast coming up. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, you know, lets them forget about Hermione for a second, because they are baffled by how awesome the Great Hall looks and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Halloween-y and spooky. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they had a long day.
Yes.
And they were just going to help themselves to some potatoes and stuff, super hungry. Mm-hmm. And then we get the famous scene with Professor Quirrell.
Yeah.
You know, the troll in the dungeons yell. But even in the books, Quirrell is a pretty good actor, as we now know.
Troll in the dungeons.
Yeah, I know. And then he faints. I mean,
he does.
He doesn't, probably doesn't really faint. I don't know.
But he duped. You know, he definitely, something's going. You wonder, sorry to interrupt, but I do wonder if Dumbledore and Snape were both sort of talking at this point in time going,
something.
We don't know
off.
If it's him, but something is off.
Yes. They, you know? They have to, I wonder why Dumbledore is not more, like, suspicious of him, because here's the thing, sweetie. I've been waiting to talk to you about this.
Yeah.
Quirrell, he participated in protecting the stone. Mm-hmm. With a mountain troll.
Right.
And here he comes in being super scared because a mountain troll came in.
Yeah.
And then later on, at the end of the chapter, he like almost faints again once he sees the defeated mountain troll.
Yeah. How?
Is Why? Dumbledore not like, this person is supposed to be good with trolls? Like he
has like a gift, some sort of you know, gift with them.
I feel like he would know.
Yeah, it's definitely suspicious. It's for sure suspicious, which makes me think that they're acting a bit too, meaning like he probably quickly said, we don't see it because we're following Harry and Ron.
Yes.
Which he probably said, Severus, go check the third floor.
Yes.
Straight up. Something Dumbledore said, something's off. I'm going to play along with this, but you go do what I need you to do. Which is really cool, too. There's all these side conversations. I would love to, just like Midnight Sun in the Twilight series, I would love to get, that was like Edward's perspective on everything that happened. So, which just gives you chills to think about. But like to get a Snape or a Dumbledore perspective, like a rewrite or something, to go through the series with all this these extra things that were said that you're like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
They're because I think sometimes we buy into what Harry and Ron and Hermione tell us too much,
right?
And their idea that
their first year's perspective,
yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like kids
that the professors don't know what's up or that they're whatever the Chamber of Secrets. Like Dumbledore had other things going on. He was playing politics when he had to with the governors, and he's doing different things. So here again, he is trying to figure out what is going on with Quirrell. I think he's noticing something fishy.
Me too.
And put Snape on it.
And here we go, Snape again. You know, like, it's perfect through the eyes of the kids. Harry and Ron, they decide, they notice, like, you know, we are supposed to go back to our common rooms, but nobody's told Hermione yet. She's been missing all day.
Yeah.
We got to do something about it. And they feel bad because Ron, it's kind of his fault a little bit
that
she's missing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, they try to find her, and they see Snape rushing off to the third corridor.
Yeah, not to the dungeons.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what's, again, as a reader, you're like, oh, there's something, you know, something suspicious about Snape. But, sweetie, here we go. I don't know why I haven't noticed this before. I have a big question.
Yeah.
Okay, why did Quirrell let the troll in the building? What was his plan? Sorry, this is not a trivia question.
Possibly.
But,
I think,
like,
you know,
do you remember?
No. I'm guessing to take all the teachers down there to go get the stone.
He was trying. Yeah, I think
right?
he
to
was
go
trying
get the
to.
Stone. Yeah. So I think Snape goes and heads him off.
Yes.
And that's sort of, you know, because there's a, doesn't Snape have sort of a bite or something?
He wants to, that's his suspicion. And he wants to protect the stone, right?
Yeah.
So he goes to...
He's got
to
go face Fluffy.
Fluffy, right. But then if that really was Quirrell's plan, And I'm assuming that he's acting on Voldemort's orders.
Uh-huh.
Why would Voldemort choose Halloween to get past Fluffy if Halloween night is the anniversary of his greatest fall? Because October 31st was the night when he tried to kill Harry's parents, or he killed them, 11 years ago.
Ooh, so maybe it's sort of a redeem that day type of thing.
Right? I've never noticed that it's Halloween. That is
right.
That is the anniversary of Harry's parents'
death. That's a good call. I didn't think about that either. So it's the idea that you want to sort of reclaim that as the day you stole the stone, which puts another... significant. He's very much about significant dates.
Yeah, he
and
is.
Trophies and the other thing is that you do have people distracted. It's very much everyone's the hustle and bustle of the Halloween sort of feast and the special time. People lose track of you're not as sharp, maybe you're not as keen on what's going on because you're caught up in the celebrations. And so it's very easy to distract the professors and the students with a troll broken.
Yeah, but you could also choose a Quidditch match. You know, I think
I think it's just twofold.
It's a significant date, like you said, and I think that he would totally know what that means, October 31st. So I like the idea that you said he wants to kind of overwrite this date with a new, his defeat with his comeback.
You know, we never even think about it too much, but I wonder if folks, does Harry know? I bet he has sort of read since this time. And
I don't think he knows the exact date, but I think, you know, who knows?
Who?
Severus Snape. And I think every Halloween, I feel like he would be warning.
Yeah, for sure. I was about to say, I feel like if kids knew and if people knew and this is a historical date, they're going to go up to Harry. They're going to go up to him and pat him on the back and say, hey, well done. Thanks for taking out, you know, he who must not be named.
You're right. That is kind of odd that this is not the day in history where, you know, the boy who lived and Voldemort was defeated. That this is not another holiday on top of Halloween.
Right.
Wow.
I mean, you feel like maybe it is sort of an undertone to it or whatever, and it's just an extra layer to that big celebration. But I like that. Think about this. Think of Quirrell in his office weeks leading up to this, and Voldemort's talking to him through the turban and saying things like, you know, hey, you need to do X, Y, and Z. He's speaking, whispering to him, steal the stone on Halloween.
Yeah.
You know, can you imagine that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way, whispering to Quirrell. I did that pretty good. I could have read
that.
I
was really
good. I actually could have read the summary in that voice. Maybe I'll go back and reread it.
Yeah.
So anyway. So we definitely we're I guess we ready to kind of jump into you said it in the summary.
Yeah.
You said Percy's on fire.
Yeah, he's in his element.
Oh my.
Let's go. Let me through. I'm a prefect. Follow me.
Yeah. You know, when you put those kids in those responsibility roles or whatever, they take them serious.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, even kids who like for our various drills and stuff, or if you pick somebody as a leader, they're like, let's go.
Yeah.
I mean, shoulders are back, chest is up, and they're like,
and it's good,
time to lead.
Yep.
And it's good. It is. I'm glad they have these roles at
me
Hogwarts.
Too. I always love seeing, you know, students or, you know, kids going beyond what they think they would be capable of sometimes. And they
put themselves out there
and
be a leader.
Mature.
Role model.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So we see Snape rushing off and Harry and... I almost said Hermione. No, Harry and Ron are going after Hermione.
Yep.
And then they figure out the troll is not in the dungeons anymore, but he's upstairs in the corridors and...
strolling by.
They unfortunately run into him and they see him...
Or fortunately,
maybe. Mm-hmm. They see him walk into a room and they're like, perfect. The key's still in the lock. Let's lock him in.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as they did that, they hear a scream out of the room. And I think it's cool when it was described when Ron, of course, I had it just 1 second ago here. Mm. Ron's like, oh no, said Ron, pale as the Bloody Baron.
Pale as the Bloody Baron.
I love these comparisons within a book. We just learned about the Bloody Baron and who he is.
Yeah.
And then you kind of you know, pull up these comparisons where it's like, no, you can, you know, he's a ghost.
Actually, it describes the Bloody Baron through Ron, which is cool. It sort of characterizes him through Ron in this moment. It is, it's genius to do that inside.
And she does that later, and I'm going to talk about it later when she does that again. So they realize they have to go back because they realize that has to be Hermione. She seems to be the only one who's missing, really. Mm-hmm. And they just locked her in with a troll. So they open up the door. And Harry's like, Harry's very quick in this moment. He's like, we got to confuse him. He's about to attack her. He's not very witted or smart or anything, but we got to confuse him. That's our only chance. So Ron's yelling, oi, bee brain.
Oi.
And
oi.
I know
I
Harry.
Start talking like that more.
So I know Harry attacks him first, and his wand gets stuck in the troll's nose, which is disgusting. Mm-hmm. And it's a very, like, cute element for kids in the movies. Like, ew, bow, troll bogeys and stuff. But, shout out and credits to Ron. He mastered this spell that he wasn't able to do earlier with a huge club instead of a feather. They were practicing with feathers.
That's true.
He just learned about the spell. He wasn't able to do it earlier. And that was, it's described, it was the first thing that came to his mind. Mm-hmm. And also, his subconscious did listen to Hermione because this time he pronounced it wrong. Right.
Well, your subconscious was trying to, you were calling Flitwick's class.
Wrong.
Yeah,
I mean, like, huge credits to him that
he's thought about that. It's a heavier object, and it's a more stressful, intense situation. Mm-hmm. So he really did internalize everything that Hermione said, and probably dwelled on it and thought about it and was thinking about her and stuff. Yeah,
and almost like people describe it when you're in a, you know, almost like near death situation, and you gotta run or protect yourself. So some people talk about like, almost like they develop this superhuman strength, or like
adrenaline rushes.
Their senses are so much more alert and everything.
Heightened. Yeah,
and I feel like the same thing with your magical abilities can happen when you're in danger.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's pretty cool how he mastered the spell through that. Mm-hmm. Protecting his future wife.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It is so cute.
And then, this is a little bit of a mystery to me. They defeat the troll. Everything's good. And then the teachers rush in. And Harry was kind of hoping, wow, we are awesome. Yeah. We just defeated that big thing. But his hopes of 50 points for Gryffindor quickly faded. And when he saw Professor McGonagall's face, she was also furious and shocked at the same time. I mean,
they could have died.
They could have died. And it's all, we know as adults, you're always just worried about the kids. That's why you get so angry, because you're just worried most of the time.
Yeah.
And then Hermione steps up and tells a straight lie to the teachers.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I'm almost wondering, like, it makes sense for the story a little bit, but also, in my opinion, if they hadn't they told the truth to Professor McGonagall, here's the situation. Hermione, she was in the bathroom, and she doesn't even have to mention the reason why she's in the bathroom. She just, you know, during the feast, maybe she had to go to the bathroom. So she went to the girls' bathroom. She didn't hear what was going on in the Great Hall, so she didn't know about the troll. And Harry and Hermione remembered, oh, Hermione went to the bathroom. We better let her know. And then they went, followed her, and they don't have to say, okay, we locked her in with the troll, but the troll was already in the room anyway. So I'm kind of wondering, why didn't they just tell the truth? Because it's not their fault. It's not Hermione's fault. It's more like the teacher's fault, or the Percy's fault. Almost they didn't make sure that everyone was there to me.
You know? I think it's because, you know, Hermione wanted to sort of shield them from any embarrassment.
Yeah.
In terms of why she was in there crying. Not that she had to tell, but like she was, she had missed several classes. The teachers knew
that's true. She missed classes.
I think she wanted to shield them just a little bit from the embarrassment of why she was there. And that also goes a long way with them. They're like, wow, she totally could have, we know why she was in here crying, and we felt guilty about it. It's an unspoken thing. She knows, they know. And it does, like you said, it's good for the story in terms of like, okay, well, you know, now she's bent some of the rules a little bit to kind of help them and show them that, like, I got you guys, I got your back. And thank you for helping me, sort of.
And it's very sweet how, you know, we'll get to this here in a little bit, but you're right. It does make sense for their story and how she now protects them and they kind of protected each other. Mm-hmm. And I just love this line. And I remember exactly when I first listened to the audiobook in German. Mm-hmm. And I heard this. I bursted out laughing because I thought it was so hilarious.
Yeah.
Just the thought of it. Hermione hung her head. Harry was speechless. Hermione was the last person to do anything against the rules. Oh, first year she was, but later on we learn she loves it.
Right.
And here she was pretending she had to get them out of trouble. It was as if Snape had started handing out sweets. Like, I know it's not that funny, maybe, but I think, like, just the thought of, this is, like, that doesn't happen. Like, can you imagine
him passing
just
out
him, like, oh, yeah, it's so-and-so's birthday.
Hey, good job. Yeah, good job today in potions class. Here you go. Here's a treat.
And
I wouldn't eat it. I'd be like,
yeah, what's wrong with it? Nope.
What's in here?
And I remember Rufus Beck, who reads the German version of the audiobook, he was like, es war, als würde Snape plötzlich Süßigkeiten verteilen. It was just so funny as a kid to think about. Like, if you know, like, a teacher who's super stern and who never laughs, who really actually hates kids or whatever.
Right. Who's mean, yeah.
And then you think that person would start handing out sweets.
Yeah, would have all of a sudden, like, it's like a split personality. It's not even them.
It's just a funny thing. And she does it here again. Like I said, with the Bloody Baron, she just makes those comparisons to kind of give us an idea of how unlikely it is that Hermione would tell a lie to teachers.
And at the same time, you told us more about Snape.
Yeah.
Subtly. It is good.
So good.
It's really good. Yeah. I need to remember that for, like, our creative writing class, because having kids sort of use other characters to describe or characterize each other because of opposites or something, it's cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
Okay. And then they're sent back to the Gryffindor common room.
Mm-hmm.
They actually won 5 points. It's kind of funny how it starts off. I don't know if they do that to the first years where they kind of ease them into the point system and they take off like 1, 2, or 5 points is a lot. And then later on it becomes like 10, 20, 50 points.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wow.
Maybe it's because as the responsibilities grow and as they can influence the House Cup, the older students have more influence.
They're longer, they know how it goes. Yes. Yeah. And first years they don't really know.
It's less significant. Yeah. It actually makes a lot of sense if you were to do it that way, because you don't want the little kids to be like, make one big mistake and like now the cup's just out of.
Yeah.
You're like the first year, it's just ruined it for all these upperclassmen who are working really hard.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I think it's just so cute, such a cute thing. They all knew from now on they were going to be friends, but they didn't say anything, you know, nothing but thank you. They just muttered that little thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. And then the next day.
And they knew. Okay.
The next day they're talking to each other, you know, like they're going to go on and be friends.
They bonded over that. And
I
mean, not just over that one thing, but like over the whole last couple of weeks.
And they'll continue to this whole book. I mean, really, because my thought earlier when you said, like, you know, Ron saves his future wife, it's sort of like, when did he first start? When do you see that first sort of like, oh, I kind of like her thing? And I have to think about that, and maybe you guys know already, but when's that first little moment where you're like, ooh, they're more than friends? You know, I'm trying to remember which book or what moment it would be.
I can't wait to once we get to the chessboard when he plays chess and stuff. I think, I don't know. When I think people have argued when he sacrifices himself that Hermione was like,
ooh.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. I like that. All right, cool. Yeah, great chapter.
Actually, so much that happened. I was having, you know, difficulties writing the summary because I felt like I just left out the whole Quidditch thing, really. And
it's so honestly happening. It's weird to say it's a very concise, shorter chapter. Mm-hmm. You get like, you just get these really big moments or whatever. And and by the way, sometimes we will kind of, I like making connections to the text in terms of just like stories and just how I connect with the text or whatever. And we want, also, by the way, I don't think I've said this yet, but maybe I have, maybe I can't remember, maybe Ez is losing his mind, who knows. But if you guys have thoughts or self-connections or stories, I think it's great. We actually got one from Andrew the other day. Just want to give him a shout-out because I appreciate that. He like wrote us in, and shout-out to him. But just a wonderful human being, and I love chatting with him just in terms of Star Wars and other stuff. But like when you can make those personal connections to whether it's a podcast or it's a, you know, a book series or a TV show, whatever, it's really cool. It's fun. It just sort of... That's when you know it's a good book, right? Yes. It's got a good story because you're like, man, that actually is relatable.
Right.
A lot of people have had that happen, or they find themselves in a similar situation. So
yeah, and to us, like you said, that's what makes it, you know, a good book club for us is, if you haven't noticed, we like to sit down, you know, in a cozy environment and just in our little cottage and talk about our favorite books. And
yeah, it is. It's nice just to get up and like just talk and to chat about it, and you feel good, and we like kind of prepare. It just, I don't know, it's an escape. Yes. Right? It's just a fun, and then we talk about it on our walk and we edit the episode.
We do, actually. We do.
It's just a whole thing, and I really enjoy it, and I enjoy this like culture, and I just think it's, I think it's great. I try to encourage my kids to find their thing, to get into your thing, because we all need it. Like these mental like breaks, just like a step away from everything that's kind of going on.
Oh, and so. I love looking at on our Instagram. I love looking at all the different types of Harry Potter content creators. You know, like there's this whole other niche of collectors. Like like you said, you have in the Star Wars realm. You have also like the toy collectors, and then in the Harry Potter realm you do have too, like some do like only, what do they call it, the little figures,
like the action figures.
Not the action figures, but the ones that actually a logo was based on them.
Oh, Funko Pops.
Yeah, Funko Pops.
Yeah.
Funko Pops.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some collect only Funko Pops, and I think they get so creative with them. They create actual scenes, and they become little photographers, and it's so cool to see how just this one story sparks this creativity through, you know, all those people in different ways. They connect it to different things in their lives, and I think that's
awesome. Yeah, that they like, whether it's art or whether it's toys or setting scenes or photography, as you say, or... Yeah. Like for us podcasting and things like that. Yeah, everyone's kind of connected. It's really cool to see that. So if you're one of those people, by the way, reach out. Like we love to amplify that sort of thing. So
yeah, and I think that's, I mean, that's the exact definition of creativity, is if you bring something, you know, two things together that have never been together. Like, you know, if, for example, like someone loves candles and someone loves Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings, and they make Harry Potter themed or Lord of the Rings themed candles.
Yes.
Like that is so awesome, and it brings the whole story to life, and it brings your personality to the table, and that's just so cool.
Yeah.
And we just want to, you know, like you said, amplify, shout out to all those creators out there, and also the people who enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a whole, what are creators without the people who enjoy it?
Right.
And appreciate it. Okay. I feel like we already kind of did our advice of the week here, and
yeah, and we did earlier when I was mentioning it, and I also wanted to mention just again, if, as you say here, so Lottie wrote this in the doc, if you lock your friend in with a 12-foot mountain troll, don't just run away, go back in and help your friend.
Yeah.
I mean, really, if you get your friend in a pickle,
yeah,
go help him out.
Yeah.
That's pretty easy. Yeah. I mean, which is, you know.
I think that's really, really cool that you show that to kids. Yeah, don't just run away, but you have to go back. And
especially if you know, if you notice and you see it. At school, we often say, like, yeah, if you see something and you're there and you just
don't
walk away. If you move on from that and you don't do something about it, you can, you kind of become a part of it. And so we try to teach that early on, because there's so many things where if more people would just stop and help or do whatever, it makes life better. Yeah. You know, it can really help other people, help those in need. So pretty simple.
Good call.
Okay. All right. Well, I think maybe in the future we'll kind of pull in that other Harry Potter hangout theory thing.
Yes.
Because I think it's fun. Because right about now is when I think I would like to do it. We also went a little bit long today, so... surprisingly, I don't know. Maybe not surprisingly. I don't know. Halloween was fun.
I had a lot of fun.
We get double Halloween this year. Think about that.
I know.
We get to celebrate it twice, you and I.
Oh,
and everyone listening. Okay. All right. Well, hey, friends, this is wonderful. Happy Halloween to you guys.
Happy Halloween.
Happy summer Halloween.
Happy spooky season.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, with that, that's all for this week. Thanks for tuning in to Shell Cottage Radio 94.7 COZY. We hope that you'll join us in the future. We do thoroughly enjoy meeting new positive Potter people that don't behave like babbling, bumbling bands of baboons.
Baboons!
If you don't want to miss the next episode, be sure to subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, follow us on social media at Fleur and Bill.
Also, if you haven't already, because we want to make it part of the show, we want to invite you to check out our YouTube channel, Harry Potter Hangout, where we have a lot of fun creating short videos covering more Wizarding World background information and theories. If you truly enjoy our content, consider supporting our growing Wizarding family on Patreon or Apple Premium at Fleur and Bill. Thank you so much to all our current Patreons, by the way. We appreciate you to the moon and back. Alrighty, next week we will discuss Chapter 11 of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, Quidditch. So definitely don't miss out on next week's episode. Again, happy Halloween. Thanks for joining Blur's Book Club in their little shell cottage today. We know it's not much, but it's home.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.